Raven!
Equipment Wielder! Blue Caster, Ishida Zazeel!
Respecting the source material, Green Caster, Zenshi! Actually White!
Black Caster, Ransack!
Loyal and Loud, Pink Caster, Lightred!
Broadcasting loud and opinionated perspectives across the internet!
Radio Sentai!
Cast Ranger! On air!
Welcome, one and all, to episode 23 of Radio Sentai Cast Ranger. We have the full five-man team here tonight.
Yep.
And we apologize that we missed our last week's episode, but we were all at Fan Expo.
Yeah.
And today we're coming at you with another of our super patented, ultra-effective double episode specials!
Yep.
Oh yes, before I start that, recently I was at the CNE, the Canadian National Exhibition in Toronto. I saw Metrolinx there.
Oh really?
And they have, I found out their secret plan.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make a green-powered Megazord.
Really?
Yes, they're so make it economically friendly.
And evil?
Yes.
And that's on my powers?
We don't want fucking green-powered Megazords. Fuck that shit.
It's powered by electricity and evil.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm finding it hard to, like, hate these guys all of a sudden, and then it's like, they want to make their Megazords green-powered. Well, that's not so bad.
I got
and
to,
evil!
I got
you
to,
know, green with evil.
So I got
a mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
I got to go inside one of the Megazords' legs. And it was pretty...
Stop being
meta. I gotta say, it was pretty nice.
The Metamorphin Power Rangers?
I hate them, but it was pretty nice.
They know how to make a decent Zord.
They know how to make a pretty decent Zord.
Did you find out how they're slowly but surely sapping away at my powers?
Yeah.
With the green Zord!
Right, no, the green candle with the stripper that I lit on fire.
That's yeah.
I've already thwarted that, Lane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stop living in the past,
still
episode.
Still gotta prevent Metrolinx from making this green-powered Megazord.
I don't always remember things, because remember, I am the Green Ranger.
Yep.
And, well...
Why would he remember that? You hate remembering things.
Implications of the Green Ranger. But...
Therefore susceptible to amnesia.
Yes, they're
fits of amnesia.
It's some amnesia and hunger. and hunger.
Often split about a week apart.
But yeah, so we got a double dose of Gaim and a double dose of Tokuchi, and my god.
Wow, has shit happened.
Oh my god.
Wow, has shit happened.
Well, let's start with Gaim.
Kamen Rider Gaim.
Okay, starting with episode 42...
Yay.
I like how right at the start we have Michi with being a complete, like, completely not giving a fuck about the fact that he betrayed everyone, just showing up at the garage, because, my.
It's like, you're coming with me.
Well, I don't know.
Come with me if you want to live.
I feel like it's past all that where pleasantries and formalities are right out the window, where we're just kind of like, for anyone to show up anywhere is just
thing that happens now.
Yeah, it's just to be taken as, this event is happening here. Fuck where that is.
Yeah.
And then he's like so concerned for Mai because, like, you know, she has the golden fruit in her now, and then Ryoma shows up out of nowhere and is all like, I can save her. I can get it out of her. And
I'm the closest thing to a doctor you got.
Let's go to my secret lab that's apparently in an abandoned hospital.
Yeah, okay. I like how Ryoma apparently had, like, Mayuri-level foresight and set up a secret extra lab inside of a random shitty hospital somewhere.
I believe it. He's smart like that.
But also,
it's completely within his character.
Also, he works for Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil
runs the city.
Yeah. All of the property in the city.
And they back themselves as a pharmaceutical company.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Possible to make
they
sense.
They should like team up with Smart Brain. Then they can combine home electronics.
That's why I want a Rider movie where fucking Smart Brain, Zect, and
Yggdrasil
fucking team up and they just
that would be so
fuck
cool.
Shit up. And then the main protagonists are fucking Kabuto, Blade, and Fies. Or no, I mean Gaim and Fies.
Because Kabuto's
sure, throw Board in there, even though they already burned to the fucking ground.
What's more is, I'm sure Tendo Soji would be the harder of the people to try and get back.
Yeah.
But we know Fize would come back.
He already did.
Exactly. Just as very much, you already just came back.
And
I'm
honestly,
sure we can get the three
and
of them
honestly,
back
if they can't get Koda's actor, they can just get his twin if he's up for
yeah, him. What the hell? Koda, Gakusano has a twin brother.
Yeah.
Not gonna spoil anything, but expect an appearance.
That's cool.
That is an ingenious way of doing that, and by ingenious, I mean horribly, horribly lucky for that film crew.
You gotta wonder if that was a factor in hiring him. Do you have a twin brother?
No.
We'll call you later, thank you.
Do you ever think that maybe his twin brother, like, comes in for random shoots and just pretends to be his brother, and so every so often...
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Every so often in Gaim, it is not, in fact, the actor that we think it is playing Kota. It is, in fact, his twin brother!
Just for the record. Just for the sake of discussion, his twin brother, his name is Kei, so it's Kei Sano.
Okay.
And apparently Geki Sano, like, I watched the... I'm just gonna call him Kota. You know that video they released where like they're doing like a mini game, like game show or something.
That battle camp war thing.
So Kota's like talking or whatever like that, and he's being all like, "Nah, I'm awesome," and then literally does a backflip. And so I'm like, okay, so maybe he's done some of his own stunts maybe that backflipping we saw him do in that one episode where Baron went to the other world. Maybe that was actually Kota doing that, which I could believe. So I like when actors do their own stunts. That's cool.
You know, I feel like in the case of Kamen Rider, I don't feel the budget's high enough that they're hiring stunt doubles.
Can I just say right now that I think it's really, really cool the idea that there are twins out there, one of whom is a legitimate actor, the other of whom is an incredibly skilled stunt double.
That would be awesome.
That is like the greatest team ever.
Exactly.
Because who can't... Like, the performance could be indistinguishable. It's, like, perfect physical acting and perfect actual acting, like, together, yo.
That sounds amazing. Well, just give it the right branding and marketing, and they could be amazingly successful.
Continue on. So, also, we find out what Kaido's true motive is, which is kind of
there have been subtle hints of throughout the series.
So, pretty much his whole thing is, I don't care what happens to this world. This world sucks. Yggdrasil's fucked it over. I don't care anymore.
I don't feel like that's us realizing his...
It's more like reconfirming.
Yeah, it's confirming that he was...
He's still a dick.
I was going to say, his intention is shone through this whole time, and no matter what character development he's made, it's no surprise that it's coming full circle back to...
No, I'm a douche.
Yeah, no power struggle, though.
Here's the thing, though. This is what kind of cements Kaito as a character fully entangled in Helheim's web. You know how in the early series he was all about, Yggdrasil built over that tree I really loved. That tree was planted by Redway. And then he says that there was nothing else in the old world that he gave a shit about. And now he's fully embracing the Helheim invasion. So, from the start, his destiny has been with Helheim. So everything that's happening here is completely logical character advancement.
Yep. God damn it, Kaido, you're so awesome.
Really is.
And here we go, this episode starts adding more and more fucking contract rules and clauses to the whole ceremony and usage of the golden fruit. Oh, it's gotta pass through a woman of the beginning, and she has to choose a champion, and blah, blah, blah. Christ!
I feel like handing it to Mai almost guarantees it's going to Kota.
Probably.
Also, they found out Kaido's injury, like they finally
found out about
Minato saw it, and she's like, "The fuck is this?" And he's like, "Don't worry about it, man, it's fine."
And she's like, this should not have progressing this far. You should be dead.
That's what the belt's for.
Wearing the belt.
I love how Kota was the only one to ever question why Kaito was always wearing his belt, and he completely believed the bullshit answer he gave
because Kota was doing it too.
No, he wasn't.
Why did he believe that, I've just been holding on to it. Oh, yeah, no, I've been eating through this thing.
No. His reason was, you never know when monsters might attack. You gotta be prepared. It's in your back pocket!
How is it in his back pocket? Things this fucking...
Okay, usually I'm the one that questions belt mechanics, but I'm completely outside of willing to explore this aspect of belt mechanics. It's always in their back pocket.
Another one of the highlights of this episode was we finally found out who Sagara is. Let me reword it, what Sagara is.
Yeah.
He is Helheim itself.
The will of the forest.
What's funny is, in one of his things where he's showing, like, he's changing or whatever, he looks like a snake at one point.
Get
like,
it? Because Christian mythology. Because that hasn't been hammered into the series quite deep enough.
Not hammered into. It's been used.
Yeah.
But I like this reveal because Helheim is indifferent. Helheim is neutral, and what has he been up until now? Pretty much, he plays both sides, but he doesn't sort of root for one over the other. He just sort of...
He's watching to see what happens.
Honestly, that's what he claims, but he has helped Coda out a lot more than
that's
the
because
others.
Coda's been very... I was going to say, he
finds Coda interesting.
Yeah. Just, hey, this side's kind of captivating my attention. Hey, other side, are you going to do anything interesting in order to captivate my attention? Not right now? Okay, well, I'm going to hang out with Coda for a while.
Yeah. But that's just it. He's looked at Coda the whole time and just kind of been like, oh, look at that. He did that thing I kind of expected nobody to ever do. Hey, you, have this. Do this.
You got an achievement. Have a course, you're interesting.
Have this.
Yeah.
Have a super orange.
You did a thing. Have a cookie.
Have a super orange. Have a cookie dokie.
Cookie dokie.
Super oranges make you strong, kid.
Yeah. Cookie dokie orange.
Hey, here's the thing that's going to turn you into a monster.
Okie dokie.
Yes, thank you for the joke, Ted.
the cookie falls from Helheim.
Just like the vines are made of cookies.
Junk food themed supervillain riders from...
You did a really good job. That's the henching chapter.
Yeah. Well, we got that, yeah.
Nice try, buddy! Cookie arms!
So yeah, Sagar reveals himself to be Helheim itself, and pretty much claims that which is exactly what I thought the ending was going to be, that he's been going through different worlds, rewriting them, claiming to evolve them through means of destruction, simply because destruction is the tool he chooses to use. Which I think is bullshit, but whatever, I'm not going to argue this late into the game.
It's good enough for decades. Of course he uses destruction over creation.
Yeah, it's the decade logic. Let's go with that.
He's a douche.
Another interesting thing...
Speaking of decade!
Yeah, another interesting thing I really liked was... Michi's like, oh, Coda, he's probably going to want to get the golden fruit too. And Ryoma's like, well then, what do you think you should do? You should kill him.
And then he pulls the most bullshit thing Ryoma has ever done the whole show.
Hey, I was so wrong about this.
Okay. Sitting in a drawer, an unlocked drawer, in a secret lab in the shitty hospital in the middle of the city... is this amazing, powerful, soul-sucking lockseed of death and destruction, the Yomi lockseed, the Yomotsu Higuri lockseed.
That was spoiled for us ages ago via magazine scans.
Exactly. I know.
Shit does.
No, I know, but we don't usually talk about magazine scans
really,
on the show.
Except we have.
No, I know, that's why I said not much.
I don't want to sound pedantic or anything like that, but how the fuck do you technologize something that deteriorates a metaphysical concept?
I understand your argument completely, and I was at that stage when I first understood
it's
what the Yomi Lockseed was. That's where it all leads to. I'm sorry.
And I looked at that.
I've gotten in shit
for that being my argument, but I go, while I do agree with you of shut up, it's a kid's show, this show is so much smarter than that, that it genuinely surprises me to see something
as far as I see it, it's Ryoma. That was a prototype he made in his way to designing the Genesis driver and the energy lock
but here's my problem. He goes, it's the most powerful thing we have, it was too dangerous, we saw that,
and I put it in a drawer.
Just so fucking conveniently every single power Michi's ever had.
Is anyone else if he did a test with the Yomi lockseed? I just want to see the test footage of a guy using it, like a guinea pig using it.
I bet you someone died.
Yeah.
How did Michi get the kiwi lockseed?
I think he just picked it.
He just picked it. But now this Yomi lockseed just so happens to use the Budo Ryoko and the Kiwiel.
Can I just say that I don't think that this stretches back quite as far as all that. I think this actually he might have just put. I think he's just bullshitting, and he just put, like, this grand masterpiece together with all that he could after being inspired with his, like, Kiwami O-face.
I don't think he'd have bullshitted about something if there wasn't going to be closure to the contrary.
No, I know. I just think
started and ended with him going, we made this a while ago and it was too dangerous to use. I don't think he'd have made a bullshit excuse for something that had no closure.
I don't think so either, because for the most part, aside from...
When he bullshits, we usually get clarity later.
Aside from the obvious occasions where he has... Ryoma doesn't generally bullshit too much.
No, he's a very straight-laced person.
And like I said, when he does...
If he's fucking with you, it's by omission. He's not outright lying to your face.
When he sugarcoats it, later you get that explanation.
Which kind of happens in these two episodes, actually.
Can I ask a question? This is a legitimate question. Is this thing a lock seed?
Yes.
So it's a...
It's literally a golden and purple version of the Budo lock seed.
I like to think
it's technologized.
Correct.
Energy lock seed.
Yeah,
no,
so
no.
I think
it's a normal lock seed.
I think, well, no, what I think, oh,
I
what
think
it is
prototype.
It's Ryoma's attempt at making a lock seed.
Lock seeds are fruit.
But, Paul, we've already established that Ryoma essentially invented the energy lock seeds, which work under the same principle.
Sure.
So the idea is that this lock seed was one of his prototypes on the way to making...
I made this. It's really strong,
something
but it's fucked up.
Something that worked with the Sengoku drivers, but...
If it
had some serious issues with it in the fact that it drains its user's life force.
If it was created before the events of the show, then it would have been a normal lock seed because the Genesis drivers weren't done or even made.
When they did the test with Takatora... We saw what happened when he used a perfectly functioning regular-ass melon lockseed and how that almost went up in smoke.
Because the Sengoku driver wasn't perfected just yet.
And that's fine. But now imagine if we'd taken this prototype of this energy thing I tried to make that didn't quite pan out and tried to make sense of that back then. Which is why they probably went into the unlocked drawer you go.
We'll fire you under you for unlocked.
Until I have a sucker who uses the fucking
Ryoma handed it to one of his, lackeys, and he's just like, here, do something with this. I don't know, do whatever. So the guy's just like, he's like, I'm getting a bad vibe from this thing.
Better put it in my belt. Oh! Whoa, that's interesting. Also deadly, but really interesting. I gotta put you in the unlocked drawer.
There's a thing about this episode that I kind of complained about that, it's from a, technical point of view from, how they could have done this. But, when Coda sees that they, found that they released all the Kaido and them released all the other people who were, part of the, who were hooked up to the life-sucking machine, I honestly wish he would have given his sister a hug instead of just going,
Major!
You're okay. Thank goodness.
I don't want
to hug Sailor Mercury,
I don't want to hug you. I'm not quite human anymore.
And then
that's true, actually.
But then later, there's a scene where Michi's literally in front of Mai, while she's unconscious or whatever, that. And I was actually expecting him to maybe hold her hand or something and just be like, "I'm gonna save you. I promise, no matter what it takes."
I think those both of those scenarios boil down to a "I'm no longer good enough for you" scenario.
I'm not human anymore. I've established this. Hey, I'm not gonna give you a hug right now. I'm just gonna safe.
Gonna wait till we finish saving the world.
And then we have our episode of Takatora mental spanking, which he's pretty much just like, you're not gonna accomplish anything, just gonna die.
I think this was my favorite appearance of Ghost Takatora.
Yeah!
He is he is direct in his face and bluntly says it. You are worth nothing, you will die having accomplished nothing. Your life will not buy hers. And Michi just turns around. Shut up, Nisan.
Fuck you.
Go sell some cars.
Haunting you.
I'm haunting you.
Ghost Taka. Get it? Ghost Taka played Nappa.
Anyways.
yeah.
I thought it was not Eleni.
No, Eleni's a Vegeta.
Takatora 101.
So then Michi proceeds to go fight Coda, and he's just like...
I'm pretty sure that was the same pier he fought Takatora at.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm gonna kill you now. And Coda's like, wait, what the fuck's that lock seed you have? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill you now. And honestly, The fucking thing doesn't even come out of a zipper, which how you know? No. Which
it comes out of the underworld.
It comes out of an ominous cloud. And this is how I know that this is just a Lockseed Ryoma literally just try to fucking do something with.
Like, so, you'd think Michi would at least have the sense to look up and go, this probably won't end well.
You know what I like to think? Maybe the
he's
Yomi,
already done
maybe
it.
Because
Michi
the Yomi,
sense?
No. Maybe because the Yomi Lockseed is a mixture of Budo and Kiwi, maybe that was just him trying to take two Lockseeds and
he tried to make his own.
Them.
He tried to make his own forbidden fruit.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think that's giving Ryoma too much credit on a failed project.
I think he just wanted to make super grape. Super sour grapes.
The thing that bugs me, though, about that, about Yomotsuhiri arms
five
is,
pins
is like, yeah, the Budo arms got recolored, but the Kiwi helmet is still the same color.
And... Whatever.
But that said, Ryugen Yomi is actually a really gorgeous design.
I like the design. It's really pretty.
I am getting the arms change figure.
Over to the fashionista on your...
Yomotsuhiguri.
It's Yomotsuhiguri.
Yomotsuhiguri.
It translates to fruit of the underworld.
It's a nice improvement.
Or to eat with the damned, something
nice,
like that.
It's a nice improvement on Ryugen.
I agree entirely. I liked...
Ryugen looks fine for what it is.
Yeah,
this
best,
makes it look
best,
it wasn't my favorite.
The best part of this entire fight that I really liked, though, was just the beginning of it, where Michi wasn't even giving Kodo a chance to transform. He's just like, I'm just gonna fucking try to kill you right now.
My favorite part of that fight is right after Michi throws Kodo into Abandoned Warehouse 29, and then just fuck rolls his way in after him.
There have been far more than 29 Abandoned Warehouses.
You know, shut up, I'm making a joke. No, but, like, he throws him in while he's still standing.
There's a monster attacking the Abandoned Warehouse District!
And then,
oh, no!
Okay.
Anyways.
We need the power, so...
Okay. But, yeah, so he throws him into this warehouse, and then just, like, fuck rolls his way in, like he's rolling under a fire or some shit. And then they just do the fight, and it's pretty awesome. But then, like, he does Yomotsuhiguri squash twice instead of, like, doing an ole or a sparking, and why not? We're never gonna see it again!
Yeah, it's true. It's probably gone.
Yeah, Kodo kind of smoked
it. It is gone!
Kodo
that's next episode,
it.
Though.
Until Kodo decides to regenerate it.
Oh, yeah, and the coolest thing about the Yomi Lockseed is the fact that it grants him access to somehow. Okay, this Lockseed was conceptualized and built before the series starts. Somehow it has access to the weapons of the Overlords, though, including Shin Megurin's axe. Redue's halberd, and presumably Roshuo's sword.
Well, remember, Ryoma, they knew about the Overlords.
They knew they existed. They didn't have any idea what they looked
like
or what their weapons were.
No.
A blurry picture.
Back then, they theorized.
They had a blurry picture of the Mushu.
Whatever.
They theorized they existed. They had no evidence to what
extent. I was
going to
say, for something that's been so careful, I mean, granted it was a one-shot wonder thing to begin with, but the way it could have happened and the way it did happen, the way it could have happened was so much more interesting.
Yeah.
Just, Redue gave it to him, or...
That's Ogura gave! That's what I was thinking it was gonna be!
I thought it was gonna be something from Redue, which would have made way more sense! Picked it off for Halberd!
Exactly, just anything else. And what it was, I was just kind of... Oh.
That's why I was pissed off. I was like, why the fuck does Ryoma have it?
Really?
Yeah, really.
Not from magical rift in space and time, but top drawer for the left.
Not even a key to the drawer.
Yeah.
Open it with Kiwami.
In a series like this, it was very shoehorned in.
Yeah.
Despite it being...
Shoehorn arms!
Alright.
You know what? In a show that's been so fantastically well-written and free of this, it was a toy commercial.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was.
I looked at the... They've been pushing Yomi Lockseed with the commercials and the
probably
scans
the
this and that. One shot.
The commercial for the Yomi Lockseed is probably the most fucking intense toy commercial
I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like, holy fuck!
They really upsell it. Anyways, that's pretty much it for 42. Moving on to episode 43.
Where all of the shit happens.
Orobuchi kicks into Turbo.
I think we should all just say the one thing that happens in this episode that just
completely
derails
the separation here, if we have one, or... Like, are we gonna put it
on? No, we're still in gun.
Okay. Yeah. Just to, you know, 3, 2, 1, blank, blank, blank dies.
Yeah,
just, you know.
Which one? There were three!
The first one.
You
okay.
mean...
Okay, well, first
off... The one that matters!
Let's start.
Let's just say it all at once.
Three, two, one.
Koda dies!
Hooray!
Not hooray! He's an honorable character!
And he's boring as fuck!
Absolutely not!
I don't like anything about him.
You don't like anything nice or kind, you're not an asshole.
And you know what, Ichi? Fuck you, because next week he's going to be...
I know he comes back. We all know he comes back. We look at him in his scans.
No. You're like Pedo Bear with the ponytail.
alright. Figure this out, though. It's not the death that happened, it's what led up to it.
And why?
Okay, well, go into the why.
Okay,
the moment of the death.
So, episode 43 kicks on with the second half of Gaim versus Ryugen Yomi, and it's an awesome fight. And apparently they were in a fucking pillow factory or some shit, because he slashes a bunch of feathers. Appropriately dramatic, yes. And holy shit, did we have that preview backwards, because we all thought it was Michi who was dying.
This is the second time the previews tricked us. The first time was when we saw, they actually showed a scene of Zangetsu walking towards Michi while Michi was crawling back fucking scared of shitless.
Yeah, and we all thought Zangetsu was going to win that fight, and then fucking...
Fuck you, Show! You fucking played with us twice.
Although that time I kind of figured they'd do some shit like that.
That's
how they get you to think something's going to happen, and then it doesn't.
So literally Michi jumps up, and he's about to stab Koda, and Koda's like going to block, and then he literally just drops his weapon.
Not only drops, but spins it as it like twirls
and
to the floor,
and then literally stabs him.
Takes the stab right in the fucking gut,
and then Michi's like, "Wait, you let me hit you? Why do you care?"
So he
was trying to kill him,
so he could rip the Yomi Logseed off of him and fucking shatter it. Kota is the ultimate bro.
What the fuck that bothers me is like this entire time, like when Michi's attacking him, like going through his eyes. I hope I fucking kill him with this. Wait, I actually fucking hit you with this?
It's like the only fun he was having
it was just that moment of, wait, you let me hit you.
Why?
Here's the thing with that. This completely undermines Michi's entire motivation up to this point. The whole thing was, you are standing in the way of my objective. I will move you from my path. The minute Kota lets him do that, suddenly it's no longer fun for him, and he doesn't like doing it anymore?
No. Michi, up until now, has had delusions of doing things. This entire thing has been Michi throwing a temper tantrum. This is a temper tantrum. This isn't grand design of Mitsuzane Kurishima. This isn't the great bid for world domination of Mitsuzane Kurishima. This is... Michi's not the main character, so he's throwing a little bit of a hissy fit because he knows that the person who is the main character is a better man than he is, deep down.
You know what? I see where you're coming from. So.
And this is the moment of reaffirmation where he finally snaps and realizes, no, Koda's the better man.
You know, I see where you're coming from. It's like the whole last half of the show, he's been like, I'm going to kill Koda. I'm totally going to kill Koda. And then when he finally kills Koda... Turns out I didn't want this!
Yeah.
It goes back to Koda's design, which is where I wanted to go with this in the first place, of just, no. That you find out that, why did you let me kill you? Why, like, he's like, you need to move on and be better than this. It's like, but why are you doing this for me? Because it's what I've wanted the whole time. Just even after all this bullshit that Michi has ended up putting Koda through, no matter how hard Koda wanted to believe that Michi wasn't a total knob, he was just like, no, I need to do this for Michi because it's what I've always wanted, to just have you back as being my friend. Well, how can I be expected to have your forgiveness? He's like, just fucking do it, man. He's just sitting there going, no, I forgive you. Don't fucking worry about it. Just stop being a knob. And he's like, oh, sorry, I was a knob. And then he's like, now I am the dead.
But you know what it is?
Until next episode.
It's this whole really weird thing. It's like, come on, bro, let's be friends again. But no, I'm not worth your friendship. No, you're totally... No, come on. You're totally worth being friends. Let's just be friends. Like, you know, like we... Come on, remember back in the single-digit episodes when we were bros? No, I've done terrible things. I'm not worth your friendship.
Remember the fruit bar? Remember the fruit bar? We danced, man. Remember? We danced the dance of the fruit.
Remember when we all danced like shitty untrained background dancers to the same song the whole show?
It was like an NSYNC concert, man. It was like an NSYNC concert.
You know what's horrible? I just realized a couple of things about Coda from this episode. I realized A, why I hate Coda, and B, how similar I am to him, and the reasons for one and the same. Because Coda's got this whole thing where he's like, "No, I don't give a shit what you're doing. Just get over here so we can play a game of Scrabble. Come on, dude." And this is, it's kind of like me, because you know how my friends, I have some friends we run, you know, Wednesday tabletop games with, and these guys are really prone to drama, and they get in stupid arguments all the time, and I'm always the one to go, no, come on, you guys are being stupid, just come back here and let's play the game. So after this episode, I realized that I kind of have that same personality trait with him, and I think that's why I don't like Coda, just because... He has personality traits similar to myself, and this may be me tooting my own horn, but whatever. And that's why I find him uninteresting, because I know exactly what he's going to do.
Okay, alright.
I like everyone else because they're so different.
So let me get this straight. So if I suddenly decided to turn evil, and then I was like, Ichi, I don't like your shit anymore. I'm gonna fucking kill you. And then when I actually was able to, you would let me stab you?
Now, I don't think it would go to that extreme.
He's not stupid. Also, he's not Jesus, which is the only gripe I have with Coda.
Also, I don't have Overlord powers.
He's a basic martyr archetype.
I don't have Overlord powers, also.
To the point where he comes back.
You don't know that.
With super Jesus powers.
Yeah. You know what, Ichi? I'll get you a Helheim fruit. Yeah, you know what? Helheim fruit. You can eat it. See what happens.
Yeah, you know what?
I will become Lord Ichi.
They're going completely full with all this Judeo-Christian symbolism they're going with, because honestly, we just had Coda die, and he's going to come back what will probably be 3 days later,
and just like
superpowers!
And
bro.
Just like Jesus, he's going to lead an army of monsters against his former best friend, who also has an army of monsters.
Oh, okay, so yes. Anyways, moving along. Whoa. So, while Michi was out...
And thus the Catholic Church
was
formed.
So, while Michi was out fighting Coda with the Omilox seed... Oh, by the way, Coda fucking crushed the Omilox seed with, like, no sir. So I'm like, first off, fuck, so this is a one episode form, which means, A, the toy in the aftermarket is gonna be butt-fuck expensive.
So, two episodes.
Technically,
well,
two,
it adds up to the duration of one episode.
I know. Okay, anyway, so as this is happening, Ryoma's working on Mai, and so...
Performing heart surgery.
After Michi gets back to the hospital, and he finds Ryoma, it's like Ryoma, did you get the gold fruit? He's like, surgery
was successful.
No, he didn't ask if he got the golden fruit. He asked how Mai was.
The surgery was a success.
Yeah,
Michi goes walks into the room. There's a sheet over a corpse.
Yeah.
Complete success!
It was in her heart.
I got the fruit!
The smug fucker walks in with the fucking golden fruit in a jar. Yeah, don't worry, bro. I got it. You said you'd save Mai!
I don't know why you believed me!
You believed me?
Why?
You try and manipulate me.
Everything I've done up until now should tell you I'm entirely untrustworthy.
My favorite
you
part,
knew
though,
what this was.
My favorite part was when Michi came back, though. Ryoma was like, "Oh, you're back."
He completely expected Michi to die.
He thought Coda was gonna kick his ass.
Can I just say one thing? I love the fact that Ryoma just like after Michi said, I love playing this out in like gangster terms in my head. Cause it's just like I took care of Coda. Fantastic! That meddlesome Kamen Rider will no longer interfere with my plans. My fruit lock themed plans.
Freaking A!
It's like, finally, the strongest threat is dead. Surprise, you came back.
Oh, well, I can deal with that.
What's awesome is that, like, freaking Ryoma, like, Alec, is, like, Michi's like, oh, you bitch, like, you promised me, blah, blah, blah. And literally, Ryoma's just, like...
Starts beating the shit out of him.
Beats the shit out of him. And then literally strangling him, almost about to kill him. And I'm just like, I'm just like, I remember watching the episode, and I'm just like, do it, do it, do it!
I love that speech he was giving him, though. This is why your brother didn't want you to grow bad, because liars and cowards are easy prey for bad grown-ups
and
like me.
You know what's funny? Even Sid fucking foreshadowed this shit. Michi wanted a driver, and he's just like, you're my boss's little brother. I don't think he'd like me giving you this type of shit.
The terminology, according to the subtitles, was... You know how much trouble I'd get in if I let you play with fire?
Exactly!
Did he get burned!
Even Sid foreshadowed this shit!
Can I just say that, like, the predatory intimidation that they decided to give Ryoma in that one moment was that of a fucking pedophile?
No, not only
in that!
In that
outfit!
Dressed like a schoolboy. But not even that part, but just right at the start of the episode where he's looking over Mai as he's about to operate on her. And he's like, perhaps she needs a kiss from a prince, and he's leaning over her, and I'm like, ugh.
I'm like, you deviant, you.
You creeper.
Like, honestly, like, I'm seeing this, like...
I wonder if he's a necrophiliac.
First of all, you've all heard my rant about what he's wearing right now, and he looks like a freaking... I don't want to make any pedophile jokes, but he looks like a fucking 12-year-old if he was dressing like a boy skank. And... Like, he just says those words, liars and cheaters are easy prey for bad grown-ups like me, and I'm like, why did you have to say it like that?
For all honesty's sake, that may have been something decided upon by the subbers. I don't know the actual words that were said.
No, I
know. It may have actually translated slightly different.
But I have to go with what I see in terms of... If I'm going to criticize something, I have to go with the way it's presented to me.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's...
So, if that translation's wrong, damn you, Aesir.
Yes. And if that translation is right, what the fuck, you guys?
Yeah.
So, while Ryoma's, like, almost about to kill Michi, which I'm fucking super disappointed he didn't... Mai fucking interrupts them by, like, you know, bursting out of the golden fruit. And we figure out, and this is what really...
Can I just jump in here and go, I fucking called it?
Okay. And I'm super...
And by you mean the three of us?
Yeah.
So I'm super...
Hey, maybe that's Mai fucking with time.
So I'm upset because not Mai is actually Mai.
Yeah,
so like,
future. Okay,
did it again!
So the Priestess of Fate turns out to be a result of Mai's heart fusing with the golden fruit before Ryoma extracted it. So once it
basically her soul is flying around on its own talking to people.
Yeah,
or trying to talk
to people. So Mai's body is dead, but she lives on through the golden fruit. And she, like, gives Michi this comforting speech that's not really comforting at all. And then decides, I'm gonna try and fix this! Let's fly into the past!
And this is what's really fucking stupid, because she's like, okay, I'm gonna go back and try to warn Michi, Coda, and Kaido about this, but apparently for some reason...
She can only speak in riddles.
Yes, no, it doesn't actually let her say what she wants to say.
Yeah, so apparently the golden fruit is powerful enough to let you travel back through time, but just not powerful enough to let you communicate effectively... And apparently translates your speech into cryptic bullshit.
Except for that one person who can understand her completely, Sagara. And that is Sagara. And are we surprised? Oh, fuck no.
Absolutely.
So what ends up happening...
No, I love this moment. It's just,
we've kind of solved the plot.
From way the fuck back, when we saw Sagara on the rooftop with not Mai, the Priestess of Fate. And he was having that conversation with her about, you know, knowing what it meant to be chosen by her. And now we get clarity on that full conversation. And it was literally Sagara saying to her, thank you for showing me who the three frontrunners of this race were ahead of time. Because they merited intervention from the future.
So because
why have I been focusing on these three people specifically? Because you showed me the way.
Wow.
Wow.
Just told
Thank you.
You.
So we have complete time travel theory.
You told me which
itself.
Ponies to bet on.
Literally. Yeah. So because, like, just let's step back and analyze this for a sec. Because Priestess of Fate Mai went back with the power of the Golden Fruit to warn Kota, Kaito, and Michi not to get involved with the Sengoku driver technology, Sagara looked at those three instances and said, I will focus efforts on these three. So, by trying to fix this whole scenario, Mai caused everything.
So basically, this show subscribes to the time travel theory of nothing you could possibly do in the past hasn't already happened.
Correct.
Damn.
It's like, the shit that you would do, that you would affect by going back to the past already happened, therefore you will
Well done,
it.
Therefore,
Urabuchi.
Completely futile.
Well done, sir.
I repeat, he did it again.
Yeah, he pulled another time travel.
And I don't think we've given this appropriate detail, but Mai is dead! Is actually
yep.
dead!
Yeah.
Yep, living on through the Golden Fruit, which dead she will pass on the power of to Kota inevitably.
Yeah.
She is no more. She has ceased to be. She is gone to meet her maker. She is an ex-parrot.
Ex-parrot.
At this point, that's two people dead in one episode. Let's keep this counter rolling.
You mean a female protagonist who has shed her mortal coil in the prowess of going through time and space to fix what's wrong?
And then inevitably ending up causing it?
I never saw that before.
So, a little side note, because this isn't really a big fucking thing in the episode, but this is really fucking stupid, so... Of course, when Michi brings Mai back to the hospital to get her the golden fruit out of her, he brings whatever the fuck her name is and Pecco back. Yeah, and Pecco.
Her name is Chucky. I don't care.
Other random bitch and Pecco.
Yeah.
They actually escape the hospital because they locked them in or whatever, so they wouldn't, like, do anything. They actually get out by using the whole... Wrap fucking blankets into a makeshift rope and escape out the window.
And the
which I have not seen in something since, like, the 90s.
And the funniest part of that is the fact that it is still there in the second
yeah.
episode.
So now my favorite scene this entire episode that I just... Because it's
I'm pretty sure that was episode 42, though.
No,
everybody,
but no, 43
everybody
now.
Comes back to the hospital.
So
what the fuck is there fucking blankets hanging out
there? What do So Kaido and Minato come back or go to the hospital, and literally they're looking around. They see Michi, hear Michi crying, and they just see him huddled over in like the fetal position. Just he's broken, like he's fucking gone.
And here's another bullshit part of this episode: like they walk past and go to Michi, somehow completely ignoring that Ryoma is directly to their right through a very. Open,
doing
which
an
insane window.
Good house impression.
Which is my favorite, because he's just, literally, he's scribbling.
He's scribbling elemental particle
he's just like,
theory on
the
fucking glass.
How the fuck did she just disappear out of thin air? How the fuck did she do
Don't
go through! Go through! Don't
interrupt me!
Let's find out the secret! Let's find out the secret!
Gotta find fruit. Variable for fruit. What's the variable for fruit? Why am I trying to figure out the variable for fruit?
F! So almost in a way, Ryoma snapped. Michi's fucking
Don't interrupt me, I'm mathing!
So,
that's just, I wouldn't say snapped so much as confused as all fuck.
I'm doing my best house impression.
He's like, I did not just go through that painstaking heart surgery, and by painstaking, I mean it hurt her a bunch to get my fruit.
My I just kind of stuck my hand
fruit.
Here.
My fruit.
That's the name of the episode.
Can I just throw something else out there? It's just fucking Ryoma and the fucking Genesis drivers.
Yes.
Oh, the stupid, brilliant fucker!
That thing that we've kind of glossed over that why, when Michi found out Ryoma killed Mai, why couldn't he fight back? Because Ryoma installed a fucking kill switch that fucking breaks the goddamn Genesis driver whenever the fuck he chooses.
Now, here's the problem with that scene. Now, when Kaido and Yoko show up, he does the same thing and, like, fucks their Genesis drivers, and Kaido understandably pulls out the Sengoku driver, and the episode goes from there. My question is, if Michi was prepared to fight enough to pull out the Genesis driver, which he then loses, he still has his Ryugan belt, no?
I think he's 100% aware at this point that his Sengoku driver isn't going to do him a fuck ton of good.
No.
Against fucking Grioma.
Because, honestly...
No, but you'd think he'd be angry enough to try.
Because other than Groudon, I like to think that Ryugen's the weakest of the Sengoku riders.
He had no spine to pull out the Genesis driver.
Michi does not.
That
have
was his
spot.
Leg to stand on.
Okay, sure.
I'll
buy that.
He's also not that smart.
But yeah, it was just.
I'll buy that.
Back to the previous point, which was just really funny. Like I said, Baron or Kaido going up to him. What the fuck did you do? Shut up. Finding variable for fruit. can't do it. What the fuck happened? We don't know what you're talking about. I know, right?
I don't know what I'm talking about. It was here, and then it. Fruit vanished. I don't fuck.
The fruit turned into a girl, and then it flew back in time or some stupid shit.
That shit happens in anime, not this shit.
This episode made me love Ryoma so much more than I already did, which is why the ending of this episode was just.
I know, right?
I'm happy!
Okay, well, anyways.
So, now you know how I feel about Kota, fucking
okay, so
I have reasons to hate Ryoma.
I have reasons to hate Kota. We're even.
Terrible reasons.
Ryoma pretty much decides, oh, I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna kill both of you because I got nothing better to do now. Because everything's
no, it's not that. Okay. It's you're interrupting my
you're
math.
You're interrupting my progress, whatever like that. So then he fights, beats the shit out of Kaido, and then he notices Kaido's injury, and he's like...
Because he no longer has the driver to stop it. Because
he's like, oh, what the fuck is this, huh? And Kaido's
Why
just,
aren't you dead?
So then Kaido's just really talking shit, and then he looks over, takes the helm and fruit...
Conveniently,
and, no,
there are fruits nearby.
This is that moment on this episode where even I was just like, no matter what a horrible position he was in at that time that may have forced him into it, he logicked the fuck out of that.
Absolutely.
It's that moment of, he's just like, okay, see that wound on my arm? As you said, this should probably have killed me by now. I have developed into fucking immunity walking around with this for how many episodes now? Let's see what happens when I eat the damn fruit.
It's very, I might as well be dead anyway.
Yeah. It's like, I have nothing to lose at this point, but here's my logic on this. I've had this for so long, I've developed a bit of an immunity to it. I've had this poison flowing around my veins for the last X number of episodes. Like, how many episodes has he had?
I think it was episode 36 or 37.
Yeah, so it's been like, it's a fair number.
Yeah. Just before the soccer episode.
Yeah.
Then, 36.
It's been a fair number of episodes he's had this. He's like, I've been wandering around with this for how long now? I've developed a little bit of an immunity to it. If I can stand here and fight you while this is fucking going, I'm good.
He then proceeds to
What will happen if I eat the fruit, having developed that immunity? Let's test this theory.
You like doing experiments.
Yeah. But no, but the best is how it, like how they, he words it, because Ryoma's like, you're completely insane. And Ryoma's like, Arakaio's just like, yeah, maybe this is insane as Hase. And I'm like, okay.
Except Hase didn't have half the logic.
So, no, that's why that line bugs me, because Hase didn't go, like, yes, he kind of went insane. It's honestly because he thought eating the fruit would get his belt back. And
it's more like they both wanted power that they used to have.
Yeah. So, he turns into an overlord himself, and thus Lord Baron is born.
Aptly named Lord Baron.
And God
gorgeous.
Damn.
Rape.
Proceeds to beat the shit out of Ryoma. Sends Ryoma, like, into a wall. Like
can I just comment on that for a second? Because that was a cartoon death.
Yeah.
He punched him into a wall, leaving a human-sized imprint, his body intact. He had a moment where he just, like, his eyes moved. Like, he was still sort of alive. Like, I could see the little canaries tweeting around his head.
Like, maybe
and then
someone's
he
done that
fell
already.
To a horrible Wile E. Coyote death, which didn't even end with a...
Well, actually, the way that worked was he fell out of the wall onto the floor, and then he gave him, like, his last,
proceeded,
you will die speech.
Proceeded the monologue for a minute.
And then threw himself off the
and
roof.
And the Shrekening commenced.
And yes, no impact sound. That's something I wanted to take note
Accidentally walks off the side.
Not accident. He knew he was dead. He just didn't want to give Kaito the satisfaction of being the one to kill him.
Oh, he might
Which
be
is why I saw that happen. I'm like, no!
If
my favorite villain's dead!
Ryoma, if you are dead, stay the fuck dead. fuck you, buddy.
Another thing that I'm really curious about is the fact that Yoko has the Duke belt now.
Yes, new Duke. Want femme Duke.
Yeah.
Want sexy
can
Duke.
Can that happen, please?
Because she can't be hurt.
Which is why...
Exactly, because her belt
no longer has her Genesis card.
So now show me Duke.
She picked up... Well, here's the problem with that, though. They established a while ago when they gave... when Zack got his, and Kaito handed him that, they established Kaito was keeping his own original fucking Sengoku driver, which is only he can use.
Yeah.
He does not have the mass-produced one.
No, no, I'm not saying Kaito becomes Duke. Yoko
becomes
Duke.
Not Duke. Not Duke. Oh, yeah. She
We're talking about
Duke.
The Duke belt.
Yeah. Sorry, Baron 2, though.
But which
yeah, Baron Sengoku driver was still sitting on the ground there.
Yeah.
They didn't bring it back up, but it's still there.
But this is what... But this is, like... I don't think we're going to see her use it, in my opinion, because, A, if Ryoma's smart enough, he may have made a mod where only, like, he can use it himself. Or unless Ryoma was, you know, like, oh, no one will be able to defeat me
yeah,
and steal my belt.
Well, that was my thought process was, if he's smart, even if it was decided that we've established that the Sengoku drivers are for that person and they work for that person.
Unless it's one of the mass models.
If, by the power of Grayskull, they said, you know what, fuck it, anyone who has access to the Genesis driver can use a Genesis driver.
Which we've proven through Tagatora Nichi.
Exactly. Which is to say, I think if Ryoma was smart enough to think up the kill switch, he was smart enough to install a failsafe on his. That
it's
just said, if it's not
because
me,
did,
it doesn't happen.
Because he did upgrade the shit out of it.
Yeah.
In comparison to everyone else.
Here's another thing, and I'm just going to throw this idea out there. We've been operating under the assumption that a Genesis driver is a Genesis driver is a Genesis driver, and you can interchange, use it, and stuff like that, and it'll have different things for different people. The main difference that I've seen between a Sengoku driver and a Genesis driver is the plate. The plate, as I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, I believe to be a sort of data storage thing for the schematics of the chassis of the suit, which then you'd have the Lockseed stuff that comes down creating the armor plates.
While I would agree with you on 99 times out of 100, there have been times where Coda has used Jinba Lemon right out of the gate. Which means he would not have had the Geimrider indicator in place.
But he doesn't use a Genesis driver. My point is that a Genesis driver doesn't have the plate.
No, I know. That's why when Michi used Takatora's belt, instead of becoming Ryugen Shin, he was Zangetsu Shin.
No, I know that. Which leads me to believe that the rider system is stored inside the belt.
Absolutely.
There's no such thing as Shin Zangetsu cherry arms.
Oh, no, the lock seeds can be interchanged.
I don't think so.
Or so we theorize, because it feels like it should be working like that.
But they've
never done it.
I think it's quite the opposite, in which the Genesis drivers are...
Built for a lock seed.
Except
built for
one,
a lock seed
except
that
there's
says
one thing on
what
that.
What lock seed you put into it dictates what rider you
I can
become.
I can come up with one argument for that.
Oh?
Kota's Jinba forms.
That's
he's
an anomaly
got,
in and of itself.
I know it is, but at the same time, it is the core of a Genesis driver is hooked to a Sengoku driver. It still lets him use all four of them.
It shouldn't be. I don't want to sit here and tear apart a reasonable argument for whatever there is one. That shouldn't exist in the first place. That's not even Ryoma's technology. That is replicated technology given to him by Sagara.
Here's the thing. This is me not siding with Kevin's theory, and not to shoot down your theory completely, but what you just said about the core slot, the thing is, what could have happened is that core slot could have not been assigned to any one rider or belt, and could have been just for general use, and which is why Coda was able to use it, because we never see that core slot before Sagara hands it to him. Whereas with the Genesis drivers that are actively in use, they could have been programmed to only accept one lock seed.
Also,
I'm accepting that as a possibility. I don't believe that to be the case, but I will accept that as a possibility.
I think the secret's in the mix, you guys. When we see the Jinba forms, there's something very different that happens between an energy lock seed transformation and a Sengoku driver lock seed. It's not just a fruit comes down onto your head and forms armor. It's the lemon and the orange come down they make one thing come down, and it's a whole new armor.
Yeah, but just to point out the fact that the Jinba armor has all four Energy Lock Seed Jinba forms in it.
Sure.
It's like the Deno system. It will fold out into any of the four, depending on what's used.
Sure, yeah. I'm just trying to say that, like, the Jinba forms are yeah, they're completely they're completely different. I understand where you're coming from, but I think it's more along the lines of the fact that they combine. I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying anymore.
Like I said, I don't think the Jinba form is anything to compare as a point of reference, because it's, like I said, it's an anomaly that shouldn't exist in the first place.
True.
I think
that's it's by the power of Sagara. That Jinba armor exists because Sagara willed it to do so. That mix couldn't occur naturally. Even if Ryoma had thought, I don't know why I would, but if I could put a Genesis Core on the Sengoku driver, the fruits would do this. They don't. It's Sagara going, I have complete control of everything.
I am Hell High.
Yeah, will these to do so, they will.
I like to think of the Jinba form's successful appearance as a glitch between two systems that happened to work out to a good result that Sagara was aware of because he is Helheim. I don't think it's something he directly influenced. He had all the technology at his availability because he did sneak him the core. He pretty much looked at the Genesis core slot and the Sengoku driver technology and said, you know, if this was put in here, the Jinba would happen. It wasn't something intentional. I think it was a glitch that just happened to not be a problem.
I can't wait for the series to end, because then I can rewatch it with all the knowledge I know now.
You get to be Sagara!
Yeah, because, no, think about it. Watching Gaim for, like, a second viewing, with all the knowledge you already have of the entire series, it's going to be a whole new experience.
It's just like you're sitting there watching the...
You're sitting watching me like...
You're going to die! I know what you're doing!
No, but then you'll just see certain scenes, and you'll be like, oh, that's why that... Oh.
Yeah.
It's like the fourth watch-through of Marvel Hornets for me.
Yeah.
Anyways, we've been digressing way too much. This is our fucking monthly belt mechanic rant.
Yes.
Anyways, so yeah, Lord Baron fucks up Ryoma. Ryoma commits suicide to rob Baron of the satisfaction of killing him.
Kill stealing fuckface.
Which brings this episode's kill count to 3. Kota gets stabbed, Mai gets her heart removed, and Ryoma falls off the ceiling.
Will Goku defeat the evil Boo? Find out next time on Digimon.
Yeah. So now Kaido is apparently out to conquer the world.
Of course.
That,
boss!
That just makes sense.
Because
I was going to say, you know, episode 1.
What else do...
What
when
else
we
do
all
do?
Get down to it, power-hungry megalomaniacs?
You!
And still,
good
like
point.
I always say
We've
all
the
time... Yay, Kaido's still being a dick!
We've all been ignoring this for a long time, but this kid's a psychopath with delusions of grandeur. Usually he's the villain of this show.
Which was turned into a delightful anti-hero.
And then, now, they're like, no.
Now that all opposition is out of the way.
Which is why I think that Baron is the first secondary rider ever in the rider series to become the final villain.
Or is he?
Shadowrun.
I don't think he counts as a secondary
rider. I'm not having this debate with you guys again.
I agree that he is a rider. He's not the secondary rider.
He's the second
rider. He's
a
villain rider.
He's gonna add the opposite direction kind of happened in V3.
Sake.
Yeah.
The villain rider turned into the secondary.
Hey, say! I mean, hey,
well,
say!
That's the opposite.
I know.
We're arguing secondary rider becoming final villain. Was he really the final villain of the show?
What?
Was he really the final villain?
Shadowman? He
absolutely.
Was an RX!
Okay, well,
absolutely.
Yeah, I know, thanks.
No, absolutely.
Anyways.
Alright.
He's a boss.
Everyone knows this.
Unless you count Dien being the asshole at the end of Super Tyson.
That was a movie. No.
Dien ends Decade by shooting the main character.
There you go. Final villain, as in the villain at the end of the last episode.
The villain that
that was was retcon, you know it.
I know.
Why, you?
You're retcon.
Anyway.
Retro Sentai Tokuger.
Alright, so now we are into Tokuger and Tokuger episode 25 and 26. Two pretty good episodes. 25 was okay. 26 was fantastic. But we'll get into that when we get to 26. So first off, I'm just going to assume this. Fuck all of you. Schwartz lives, as I fucking thought.
Whatever.
So fuck all of you.
Hey, remember,
well, Raven, he
hey, remember
agreed
last episode when I agreed with you?
Okay, like, well, fuck you, and you.
I agreed with...
I don't care enough.
I agreed with everybody else the first time when we saw him fall off the cliff that, yeah, no, he's dead. And then I saw the next episode, and then it was like, no, he just flat out said he's alive. No, I'm... No.
Yeah.
Well, duh.
Whatever.
Anyways,
they start out with the train rangers actually training.
Puns.
And then we go to a fucking town full of fairy tale creatures.
Right, that episode. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've watched these two episodes in such close proximity. But fuck. The first one, episode 25, I barely
we have
remember
fucking
what the fuck happened.
Actual Momotaro and Little Red Riding Bitch and Cinderella running around.
And then the Emperor from the Emperor's New Clothes, who's fucking weird.
No, okay.
It's too hot.
Okay, I have to look this up to be sure, but I think that was Richard Brown, a.k.a. Shinken Brown, playing the Emperor in from the Emperor's New Clothes in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
He looks really close. I didn't have time to look it up.
I fucking hate it. He just kept going, oh, it's too hot. It's too hot.
I mean, like we're all doing right now?
Yeah.
I so, sit on a bus for hours
and
at
Paul's
a time.
Fast asleep because he doesn't give a fuck about Tokyo.
And the funny part is, like, Emperor Zed shows up and he's literally like, hey, what's shining, bros?
Yep. Us, I guess?
are we? You tell us.
And we're continuing the whole monsters are now light themed thing with the spotlight shadow. And the best part of the whole fairy tales being lazy fucks is Little Red Riding Hood has a fucking bottle of iced tea. I'm like, hey, nice product placement.
Hey, well, she does have a basket full of goodies to give to her granny.
Apparently they updated the basket.
But yeah, most of what this episode was, they were just trying to fix the station, and, like, apparently they have another shadow that, I guess, said... Because he's a spotlight shadow, so
yeah.
He uses light again.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah. Zed's fucking cool, but the highlight of this episode, in my opinion, was that light actually, like, stops Zed before he leaves, and he's just like, okay, wait. The first thing shining in as you saw was from us. Why are you so interested in us?
Maybe. Don't think about it.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Fuck you. Bye.
It's just a possibility. Don't even think about it.
So, Takati, apparently he gets hit by the spotlight beam or whatever like that, and then there's this really cool guy named Rio Knight who shows up. And spoilers, at the end of the episode, you find out it's Takati's brother or something, like how he imagined him as a hero. Honestly, Rio Knight's pretty cool looking.
I thought he was
cool.
If
they released, like, a Tomashi Web exclusive figure out of him, I'd buy it.
That's
pretty cool.
The absolute first thing I saw was, oh, hi, Akiba Red.
No!
I was thinking Meteor.
You know
they repurposed Akiba Red
to I
was thinking Meteor, because, you know, Shooting Star.
I do understand.
Rio Knight is from Tokari's Imagination, and Delu Knight is from Akiba Ranger's Delusion.
Oh.
So I just need to get if they release a figure out of Rio Knight, I just need to get that. And then Delu Knight and Poe's them fighting each other,
okay.
Crossing swords.
Delu Knight was pretty fucking awesome.
Yes, I see, like, he was cool, but everyone has such a hard-on for him.
Yeah.
And, honestly, so they get to the... They figure out all the bullshit with the fairy tale or whatever like that. They fix it. But the Megazord battle was really fun, because...
Before we get to the Megazord battle, I just want to point out that scene where... Like, they do that awesome team attack that Rio Knight inspires him to do. I really love that setting. It's that under the bridge area where the debuts of both Drake and Bravo happened.
Yeah.
That under the bridge area that they use in like every single show ever.
I know, but that's what I remember it for, so fuck you.
The Megazord file is awesome because it just shows that Akira just continues to
be a troll.
He's such an it's awesome, unique sixth ranger because
he steals Tank.
So Tokyo's like, oh, we're gonna summon Tank or whatever like that. Literally, Bill Dio comes in, takes it, and he's like, oh, don't worry guys, I got this one.
I was really expecting him to pull some crazy batshit wrestling moves like he does in
fights. You know what I like about that? Normally we see him come in with the fucking the shovel and the this and that. And I was like, no! Bill Dio with the fucking Tank boxing mitts on is absolutely perfect for Akira.
Exactly.
I was like, you mean that thing he does outside the Megazords?
All the time.
And then we got to see Tokyo build, which is actually cool.
I thought it was cool.
I was going to say, interesting enough for, well, he stole ours, so I guess we'll use his form.
Yeah. That was cool.
And that's pretty much what happened in the episode. Yeah, Schwartz lives.
We get more Tokari Mio shipping.
Yeah!
No, like, they're looks like they're headed there, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Tokari got, like, yay close to actually confessing to Mio.
And then Akira ruined it!
He gets startled by Akira launching bomb fireworks, and Tokari fucking super launches his glasses.
And he's like, fuck, my glasses! I can't see anything without my glasses!
Man, it sounds like Tokati was about to say something important, but I gotta go chastise Akira for launching giant fucking bombs into the sky.
And Light's just like, fuck yeah, make the explosions big! Yeah, that was it. So now let's go on to episode 26, which...
Okay,
may I just jump in first?
Hot Springs episode?
May I just say, episode 26, the Hot Springs episode.
Public bath.
Bathhouse.
Close enough.
Thank you.
Same idea.
So anyways, this episode was fan-fucking-tastic. It's right now.
Fan-fucking-service.
It's my favorite episode of Tokyuger
right now. Nice. I like this episode.
So, first off, like, they decide to stop at a town because, Rainbow Line's not working for some reason.
No, they said there's a shadow monster there.
Okay, yeah, it's a shadow monster there, but, like...
No. They don't think there's a shadow monster. There's something similar to it there.
That's making things happen.
But the station is still a normal-ass station.
Yeah.
So something's going on, they decide to go sightseeing, they lose Kagura, and, oh, beforehand, Akira's just like...
I gotta go somewhere.
So, Kagura sees Akira, and he has, like... What's great about Akira is, whenever you see him happy, you know it's gonna be it's gonna be a funny reason why he's happy. Because it's so weird. First, it was the kitten. And now, apparently, Akira has a fucking hard-on for bathhouses. Like,
this is the guy with the power to make rain, and he loves bathhouses.
Not anymore. He's not a fucking shower monster.
He could do it if he wanted to.
The teacher for next episode
him and his
otherwise.
Fucking Zaram form.
Well, no, okay. But he doesn't follow that trait anymore.
Okay.
From the look of it for the trailer for next episode, I'm just calling it right now. They're in another fucking shadow town.
Probably. Yep.
And Akira came with them because, hey, if I actually use my shadow form, I can fight in there.
Yeah.
We don't have to have
light dizzy chain rushes.
Yeah, exactly. Not that it looks like he needs to, considering it fucking pulled the frigging super form.
Yeah, that's probably how they do it.
Yeah, that's like me and Lane were theorizing last time. And Sneezy McGee over here is sneezing.
Sneezer! Nesha!
I know, just...
Way to go, Kevin. He sees five times in a row.
Going for six.
Anyways, like me and Lane were theorizing last time where we were saying the super form's gonna let him just... gonna let Light just fight in the Shadow Towns without limitation.
Yeah. I saw the toy scan for their new cannon that they're getting.
Oh, yeah, the Daikanten cannon?
I kinda want it.
I don't understand how it does...
No, what it does is it harnesses the power of all, like, the five main Reshas and then the Hyper Resha, and so you can switches the track, and then you can, like, launch a different, like, use different attacks. So honestly, I feel like this is like the new Gokai Galleon Buster.
That's exactly what it is.
Because it's gonna. So I think it's gonna be fun as long as it's not super butt fuck expensive. I'll get it.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. Anyways. And then I'll sell it next year.
This is a very Akira heavy episode, and I love it because
and
this,
Kagura.
I don't give a shit about anything Kagura does.
No, fuck
Every
you.
Time she started up with her bullshit, I'm like, sit the fuck down.
No, fuck you. Kagura did a lot of shit this episode. It was
no,
amazing.
No, I'm not arguing that she did shit, but every time she popped up and stole something from someone, whether it's a scene or a resha
or a costume.
Or a
line made light.
Or the costume or the fucking weapon, I'm just like,
made
Kagura,
light,
go
the,
back
yeah.
to your square, please.
Made,
this is the Akira episode.
Made light depressed as shit again.
Yes.
Yes.
Because she kept stealing his lines, and then she stole his fucking.
And then she stole
color.
His line.
And then as you see her running
stole
towards
his...
the monster, you just see him go in his crouch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like, no. Okay, I'm done, you guys. I'm just gonna crouch here. I'm not needed.
No, but before we get to all of that, there's lots of Akira bullshit to bring up here because We get introduced to the whole plot of, like, the bathhouse owner. Oh, I signed the contract and now I'm in debt and blah, blah, blah. And the first time they see the guy who they have the contract with, Akira's immediate reaction, while turning out to end up being the correct reaction at the end of the episode, his first reaction is seeing an obstacle is transform.
Yeah,
no, no, no,
like,
no,
no,
no! That's not how we do things.
He's human!
May I just...
Or so they
thought. I actually, looking at this episode, I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, you know what? This is actually probably one of the neatest monster plots I've seen in this episode.
Absolutely.
In this whole show, it's like, the monster isn't attacking people.
Instead, he's bankrupting them.
He's in his human form the whole time, being a loan shark.
Get money.
It's like, how do I produce darkness from people?
Bankrupt them and
I'm
make them
going
despair.
To make them sign contracts, take their money, put them into horrible debt, and close down their fucking business.
So,
although that ended up not being the dude's ultimate goal,
it would have done it too, though.
No, absolutely.
That would have been like an additional bonus. But his whole thing is he found this pool of dark energy located underneath the bathhouse,
which
so
turned
he
out
was
to be
trying...
the source of the rest stopping.
Which was the whole reason that they were detecting some issue. And if it wasn't for that pool, they would have just kept going.
Yeah. Honestly, though, this episode...
But it was just, he found the pool, he was going to do that, but he needed to get rid of the fucking bathhouse first, demolish it so he could get at the pool.
Akira did it for him.
And then Akira lifted the bathhouse out of its fucking foundation.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves again.
This episode was really great, too, because it felt like one of those movies or like one of those episodes in like a school drama where like they're trying to raise money to save like the local community center or something. So Kagura's like, I have an awesome idea to get people to come. Literally go out in their Tokyuger suits advertising the fucking
advertising Sentai Tokyugers. Fuck!
And
they
you know what?
Advertise the fucking... No! You know what was funny though? The one shot where they're in front of all the groups and they're, like, about to line change, I was completely expecting their ads to switch around, too, and I was kind of relieved when they didn't.
No, as I was watching this, I actually caught myself, like, cheering and go, yeah, raise enough money to fucking save the bathhouse, come on!
No, but I, like, when the guy was talking about what he did, like, to get business back there, I like how one of the scenarios was... Hire fucking luchadors to fucking butt-fuck everyone.
That was a misunderstanding.
That was the bad guy.
No, I know.
The bad guy kept saying, I'm going to do this.
No, but I like
and
how
made
that
it
was...
I know. He's like, I'm going to do this.
The grocery store.
Just
no.
Set...
That was...
No, excuse me. Just the contract here.
Yeah.
It's like, we want to improve business at your bathhouse. We're going to do this. Uses the terminology that is actually a legit thing... that people do at bathhouses to increase business, but then makes a pun out of it and fucking does something absolutely ridiculous that fucks over the business.
And speaking of puns, the best one ever is when they install a supermarket in the bathhouse.
In the changing room.
And the customer's reaction was, Super Sento? Because super means supermarket, and
no.
Sento
and
is
like
bathhouse.
Said, Super Sento is actually a legit thing.
Oh, it is? I thought it was just a
no,
Sentai pun.
That too, probably.
Yeah.
But no, it's just, that is a legit thing.
Really?
That is
like
one of the,
like it's a bathhouse with like a built-in.
Yeah,
restaurant.
It's like those big ass fucking bathhouses that have like the freaking massage chairs. Hot
it's like
tubs,
a it's like a spa resort.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a fucking restaurant in there as well. Like full round thing. And so we're gonna do that. Oh, hey, that sounds like a neat idea. Okay. Makes a pun out of it and stalls this fucking supermarket.
Supermarket that walks into the bath.
Yep.
But
is this where
I find
the steamed vegetables?
So surprisingly, their ad campaign's successful. They get a whole bunch of people, and unfortunately,
Akira doesn't know how fucking money works, despite having apparently visited this bathhouse 100 times.
That's the thing. That whole thing. They go through all of that. Oh man, look, our ad campaign was all successful. Yay! Go through the whole thing.
You know why it was successful?
Close shop for the day.
They charge 10 cents a customer!
No, their fucking advertising campaign was not successful. The reason there were so many people there is because Akira fucking put on all the posters that it was only 10 cents a fucking visit.
Damn it.
So it's
how
weird
do you,
as fuck up.
How have you been to this place so often?
He hasn't been to this place.
No, but he says it was his favorite bathhouse, and then he's been there.
Yeah, he said
he's
it was
been
his
there.
Best one
after
he's ever
first
been
time
okay,
there.
Okay, but he's been to presumably other bathhouses.
Yes.
So how does he not know how fucking money works to that degree if he's been to these places so many times
which
require payment?
Japanese bathhouses usually don't go through a cashier. Usually you walk in, you drop money on the counter, and you move. You don't deal with anybody. There's no exact pricing. You drop change on the fucking counter and go.
Okay.
So he lowered the price, thinking that'll get more people in here. And sure enough, it did, but that was
usually
kind of
I just pay people with rain. I don't... Money? I don't know.
But just... Oh.
Like, it's around this point of the episode I started thinking, wait, weren't we supposed to be looking for a shadow or some shit?
I knew ahead of time.
And then they find...
I saw the loan shark, and I was just sitting there like, no, that guy is way too antagonistic to not be the shadow
now,
monster.
Now, see, I also had
also,
that suspicion. Also,
plain shadow.
I'm completely with you. I also had that suspicion, but I was on a different track of my mind going along with the plot, and then at that point, that track of my mind was like, where's the thing?
I know. In my mind, I looked at it,
is
and I
went...
Is he
the thing? Can he be
the thing?
Oh,
look
good,
at
he's
that.
The thing.
I know. I went, hey... Look at that loan shark guy. Man, he's really antagonistic for this episode to not be the goddamn
also,
shadow.
Also, they both did
and
the whole
then,
coin gesture pose.
And you notice that whole thing at the beginning where Zed is talking to Coin Shadow.
Yeah.
So obviously we have a money-based fucking monster
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
And we already proven with Akira, the monster, shadow monsters have human forms.
Yep.
They just don't use them very often. So, hey... That's probably the monster. He's doing this a different way. I didn't think of the darkness pool. I just thought he was trying to make darkness by making people all depressed because he ends up shutting down their businesses due to crippling debt.
Oh, one of the
and things- I sat there, it's like, and the worst part about that plan, the Super Sentai can't do shit because that's completely legal.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention real quick about the previous episode was we got to see Nero without his hat for a second. That was fucking scary.
Yeah, I fucking odd jobbed them. Fucking god damn it.
Yeah. Anyways, back to this episode.
So they find something called a shadow pool, which is just like which
pool.
Is the reason why people haven't been going to the bathhouse because it protects so much negativity.
It seems like such completely post. Written shoehorn bullshit. It's like they wrote the whole episode and then decided this should happen to explain.
Oh, and also Kagura in her like Akira-esque outfit, fucking adorable.
That, remember when I mentioned she was stealing lines and costumes and weapons?
Yes, and fucking good. Like it's good because Kagura, like she's been like I find her adorable for how she is, but honestly, I like that she like stepped up and was like, "No, we need to save this bathhouse. I'm with Akira." Blah blah blah. And she just like you know.
Steps out of her usual thing.
Like, that's good. That's character development. I mean, she's growing a pair.
Character development doesn't mean shit if we don't know why. She just does it because.
Yeah.
She felt it was right at the time.
Yes, exactly.
She got all I think she really just got all swept up in Akira's pace.
That's exactly what happened.
Which is character development. That's shoehorning.
Exactly. That's why this is not a Kagura episode. It's an Akira episode.
It is character development to the extent...
You mean a good episode?
Exactly.
It is character development to the extent that she did something and did have a little bit of character for once in the fucking series. And not being that girl in the background who's just kind of making gestures, copying people, and just going with the fucking program.
But that's what she did! She copied
it! Exactly. It's what she does. But that, to the point of... This was an Akira episode
that Kagura rode his fucking coattails on, going, Me, I want to be plot relevant! Can I have a thing?
That is exactly.
And that was awesome.
And that's still character development.
Not good development.
No, it is not. But it is character development.
Okay, so, I will concede you that.
We have developed Kagura's character... to a point that she's really just a fucking copycat going along with things other people have done. Comes up with nothing of her own, even her fucking imagination powers, where she goes, I'm a copy classic movie character archetype.
Which we didn't get this episode anyways.
No, I know. Like, her whole thing, I'm copying classic character archetypes from movies and making a thing out of them, and that's my whole shtick.
Yeah.
And then she copies other people all the time, copies, like, just kind of goes with the flow on everything. That little cutesy character in the background. Just like, yeah, let's do that. Following the plan. Yeah,
I'm completely okay with whatever's going on.
I'm not going to argue. Yay, look at me. Moving on. And just, yeah, no, that's her character.
I like how when the coin shadow revealed himself, he, like, flipped the coin up like he was doing a birth engine.
And just as the coin passed over him, it came back down. He's in the fucking coin shadow form.
Yeah, I'm like, badass.
I'm like, okay, that was neat. I like your cinematography there, Sean.
Yeah. I will admit, though, unlike episode 7, the weapon combo they came up with this time was actually cool.
Yeah. Me and the thing where Kagura stole Light's fucking rail sword.
And then Akira rode the rails.
And then, you know, proceed to shoot the rails like it does, and Akira rode it with his fucking drill fucking.
That was actually cool.
I sat there like, okay, I'll give you guys that one. You've established that ahead of time.
So they make him big. And apparently, since Akira's built the Russia's
while this whole fight is starting up, they've been enacting their brilliant plan to save the fucking bathhouse by plucking it from the ground and moving it so they can't foreclose on it. A,
you know.
No. B, their plumbing is now fucked.
Yeah. I'll agree with you there. That was silly.
Yeah, well, and that's a thing that I have to wonder about to an extent.
It's
a weird thing with the way the Japanese
works. No, I know. It's not worth arguing beyond that.
I don't think that the bath is fed by plumbing outside of the building.
I'm not even talking about feeding the bath. I just mean the building's plumbing in general.
Not necessarily if they took enough of it.
I guess.
The problem is, I don't... In those cases, I'm not sure if that bath would actually have been fed by the plumbing, or if that's just they have a pool of water that's constantly going through a filtration cycle.
Probably
because the bath
water,
it is water,
an old style bathhouse.
The bath water would have been like some specialty. They've added certain additives to it, and they probably want to just keep it and just.
Anyways,
but so,
point C,
pick technology, not
yeah. Okay, you get a gold star. Point C, the battle with the giant monster starts, and the immediate reaction is, oh, the Beldaio's still busy holding up the bathhouse out of the ground. Let's use the other two Zords. Maybe put the house down! No? Okay.
Why couldn't he? Because the fucking shadow monster, giant shadow monster, was standing in the fucking ground that he ripped it out of.
No, I mean after he grew big and moved.
He didn't! He was literally standing with one foot in the fucking darkness pool absorbing it!
I really liked
Battle was already started by the time he got out.
Akira was in Dieselo, and he's just like, fuck, these controls are weird. I'm like, it's because it's not your custom controls that you fucking made for yourself.
No levers and pulleys for you this time.
And so apparently it's making the monster being in Coin Chow being in the darkness pool is making him very, very exhausted, and Kira's like, oh, it's heat exhaustion. Or no, Kagura's like, it's heat exhaustion! Puts fire Russia on.
By the way, that explanation is bullshit.
So freezes
his upper half, lights up his lower half on fire, and then like shoots hot water
after making a pun about, you're a bath now, fire underneath, water and buff. Yay!
And the
nobody does that anymore!
And the monster is apparently culturally enlightened enough to comment on that not being the way baths work anymore.
Welcome to Japanese humor.
Yeah, I know.
And
Coin Shadow, expert on bathhouses.
And now, the bathhouse was saved. We got to see Kagura and Mio naked as close as we'll ever fucking see. So,
to an extent,
exactly.
Love that collarbone.
Apparently,
it is still a kid show airing on fucking Sunday mornings.
Apparently, yeah. Also, Meta Noir notices Greta is still inside Zed in a way, and she's like, maybe there's hope.
I love the fact that when she like tilts her head sadly to the side, you have the dragon face looking directly at us.
Yep. But overall, like, this is a fucking fun ass episode. I loved it.
You know what my favorite part of the whole lifting the bathhouse out of the ground thing was? They put it back and the owner comes out because he's been inside it the whole time.
Yep. Man, that was crazy. Yeah, no, I bet.
Like, has all the bathwater been able to stay in place? It hasn't rustled around and spilled out anywhere?
I shit myself.
Crazy.
I've been inside this whole time! And I probably live in here.
Everyone come in and take a bath!
My insides are outsides!
Hey, good for you.
Hey,
do you guys want anything? I'll do anything you want. Can we have a bath? Awesome, get the fuck in. Water's fine!
Overall, this is
not spilled.
Not at all damage at all from you yanking the thing out of the ground with your giant train.
So overall,
can't see.
So overall,
that I don't know how. I was just kind of hovering there. My bathhouse was hovering above the ground. I don't know what was lifting it up. I couldn't see shit.
Why are there cracks along the ground along outside of my property now? Just like he was completely unaware that he was lifted at all.
Well, the fact that he came out and started talking about how crazy that just was tells me he was aware of at least part of it.
No, I know.
I just like it. Was he talking about how crazy the whole fight thing was? No, I like to think that he was just talking about how crazy that was because the thing was the bathhouse was just floating in the air randomly because he couldn't see shit. There was that giant monster running around too, getting his ass kicked by something. I don't know. I couldn't see that either.
Oh, Jesus, that's a thing. He probably didn't even see the Bill Dio holding his house up.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, my God.
He couldn't see it. That's what I said when he says, my bathhouse was hovering in the air. I couldn't see what was holding it up.
That's so cool.
Like, that's just...
Imagination.
You have to think about this shit going on in the background. Because they've established, unless you're, like, a kid or, like, have some severe amount of imagination, you can't see the fucking trains!
Wow.
Which means you can't see the fucking Megazords either, bro!
You gotta wonder if everyone else in the town just looks over and sees a fucking bathhouse flying in the sky.
Flying bathhouse, giant coin monster rolling around getting his ass kicked, you know?
That was probably good advertising.
By an invisible force.
Having the bathhouse flying was probably good advertising, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's just gonna be a fucking urban legend about this bathhouse and how it just suddenly randomly will lift off the ground and float.
See, look, there's cracks.
See those cracks? That's the proof. That's the proof right there.
That's how you get to hell, huh?
Yeah.
Dig until darkness.
Anyways, I think that's
that's it for this episode.
Also, it's getting really fucking hot here, so wrapping this up.
Full audience.
For those of you who don't know, we have to turn off the AC for this.
All that heat, it's like darkness exhaustion.
So next week we'll be back to our regular scheduled programming. One Gaim episode, one Tokyo episode, of course.
And we'll come up with a feature topic on the spot.
Well, no. Our feature topic next week is because a lot of the more information and scans and even a little trailer for Drive is out. So we're going to be talking about Drive.
We're going to take another lap around the course.
Yay! I can't wait for the series. It's Forza with cars.
From the writers that brought you Double.
And the theme song's being sung by Eternal.
Yeah.
So I'll like the first half and then stop watching it because they've already finished the main storyline?
Yeah. So I'll return to ignoring Ryder in general?
Anyways, we'll get into
and
that.
And Dave will watch all of it repeatedly at the same time.
And for it all the time ad nauseum.
And buy all of the toys.
And Forze was written by the writers of Gurren Lagann.
That's why Drill Kick.
That's why it sucked.
That's why the Drill Switch is
not
Gurren Lagann inspired.
Okay, we're done.
All right.
Thank you for listening. As always, you can subscribe to us on our Podbean website, castranger.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Look up Cast Ranger. The episodes are slowly going up on YouTube, so look for those as well on the IXI Studios channel. As always, we are Radio Sentai Cast Ranger. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week. Say bye, everybody!
Bye! Bye, everybody!